Hello and welcome to Inner Gamer episode 137. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
I'm Devin Dury.
And I'm Luis Gonzalez.
Today on the Inner Gamer, we talk a lot about the games we played this week, which was Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Yeah.
I dive a little bit into the Little Nightmares DLC, so that's fun. But it was mostly Mario, Rabbids, and
basically.
That's basically what it was. That's fine, though. Also, we have our free games for the month from PS4, Xbox One. In the gaming news world, we have the Nintendo Switch has an indie lineup that is massive. 343 Industries is working with Microsoft on VR and AR. What could that mean? And then Destiny 2 is going to have its raid officially out a week after play. Going into our discussion topic for the week is going to be Brett and myself talking environmental storytelling.
What does that mean?
Someone spliced in like some mysterious music. That is not what I meant. That is not what I meant.
That was very mysterious. Why would you do that, Brett? And Brett, you know what else?
What?
It's episode 138.
Oh, shit. I totally bombed that, didn't I? This is episode 138, guys.
Cue the music. It's too late. It's too fucking late. Cue the music.
Cue the music.
Cue it.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is September 5th, 2017. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you like what you hear, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review or tell a friend. Now it's time to talk about the video games we played this week.
Yeah.
And
video games.
We played some cool games.
Cool games.
Very cool games.
Oh, man. Out of freaking left field, this game.
Literally out of left field. I cannot believe it. Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle is here. It's arrived. It's a weird mesh of Mario and Rabbids from like Nintendo World and Ubisoft World. And this game has far exceeded my expectations.
You guys have been nonstop just boasting about it in our Slack chat, and I'm super jelly.
It's so great. It's so great. When homeboy from Ubisoft started crying at E3 when they were talking about Mario Rabbids at the press conference,
right?
I'm like, oh man, this is going to be something special, at least a 8.59-ish special. And sure enough, man, this game is pretty good, man. It's pretty good.
Dude, I'm
very, very happy with it.
Very blown away. Like, I've never played, I never played XCOM. I've watched XCOM. But everybody compares this closely, most closely to XCOM, because that's, I guess, the only like really big, huge turn-based strategy type game that's.
Oh, there's like Final Fantasy Tactics. Yeah, there's Final Fantasy Tactics and things like that. But yeah, XCOM is the common equation or comparison is to XCOM.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
Mario plus Rabbids, though.
Yes.
The basic premise is this: so you have the Mario universe, you have the Rabbids universe. In the Rabbids universe, there is this. This lady, I don't remember her name, but she's basically an inventor, and she invents this machine. It's basically a headset that allows you to fuse two items together whenever you look at them. The thing is, when she steps out of her room, this machine goes crazy and starts meshing all this stuff together, and apparently opens this crazy vortex into this other world being the Mario world. And Rabbids are basically her little assistants, and they get a hold of this machine, and everything goes crazy. They start fusing with stuff in the room, so now you have like a little Peach Rabbit, like a little Luigi Rabbit, and all these other Mario things that are in her room. And all of this gets kind of sucked into this wormhole, and you end up Mario in the Mushroom Kingdom mixed with a bunch of Rabbids little things. And the gist of it is, in your little team of three, you XCOM style defeat a bunch of other enemies using a variety of different weapons, special power-ups, secondary weapons, and it's just weird and awesome. I honestly can't speak more on how strange and awesome it is. There's an overworld like Super Mario World. There's worlds, and then there's like 1-9, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, all the way up to about 1-10 for the four worlds that are there. There's like a 3D top-down kind of way to get around all of these worlds, and as you move around, you come across encounters, and then that's when you start fighting battles. So there's about, I want to say, 25 battles per world, which
Jesus.
Is a pretty good amount. Yeah. So, I mean, you have about 100 encounters that you come across, And that's just sort of like the top layer of things. As you progress through worlds, and I say this only having gone through one world, I think Brett's only gone through one world as well.
Yeah.
You unlock new characters. So you have your two rabbits you start off with. You start off with Mario as well. And the first unlock you get is Luigi. And then after that, I mean, I really don't know what's next, but there's about 9 or 10 characters you can get.
Looks like the last one you get is Yoshi. I saw Yoshi's silhouette in there somewhere.
His little ball nose.
Yeah.
The Yoshi's the best, dude.
But yeah, there's like 8 or 9 characters it looks like you can unlock. There's a lot of unlockables in this game, way more than I expected. Weapon unlocks for everybody.
Yeah, it's weapon unlocks, collectibles, little challenges. And I agree, it's strange that they have this much of it, and it adds a little bit more to that depth, which is surprising. You've already gotten to the point where you have your primary weapon and your secondary weapon, right?
Correct, yeah. I only have one for Mario. I got the big hammer thing that I can...
Oh, that thing is really good, especially in that level you're on right now. But basically how it goes is everyone has a different type of weapon. You can have like a little blaster. You can have, in the case of Luigi, like a little sniper rifle. You can have a hammer as your secondary. You can have a little buggy that blows up as your secondary. There's a bunch of different items that you can get as primary and secondary weapons, and then you can also buy upgraded weapons. So you get coins just like you would in the Mario universe. You use those coins to buy upgrades, new guns, new secondaries. Every character also has a power-up, so like a superpower. Mario's is he basically sets himself up to shoot again. So how it basically works is it's turn-based. You have a move turn, you have a special turn, and you have a attack turn. So every character can do 3 actions in every single situation. They have an area of effect in terms of where they can shoot to, where they can move to, just like in XCOM, but it's Mario. And that's what makes it so weird and awesome.
I heard the one twist with this too is that in your move turn, you're not just doing movement, but you're doing a move plus like a mini action within it. So you can do like a team jump where you can go to another player and then jump off of their head to further yourself down the field. Or with certain characters, you can do like with Mario, eventually you get one where you can bounce off of somebody and then bounce on an enemy's head and do damage and then land somewhere else. So that's all of your move attack or your move turn. And then when you actually attack, then you can deal more damage to them plus your power special ability.
Sounds like you're getting into some real D&D rules right now.
You actually
excited.
Are. I was like, when I was playing this, I was like, man, the only thing missing is like a D20 and I'd be like all set. It'd be awesome.
It's crazy. And that's just the small, like those are very small details that when you look at the end of a battle, when you look at what you actually did, you're like, wow, I had to make a lot of very particular moves to make sure that I finished that in the turns allotted, which is another layer of the game. So you basically go into every battle not knowing how many turns you have to get perfect on the battle. And so you have 6 turns, and if you hit 7, well, then you beat the game or you beat the battle, but you don't get perfect and all the coins involved with getting perfect. And then, like you were saying, Brett, there's all these extra added layers. Like if you run up to someone and you can slide through them, you do damage. You can also team jump and jump on top of them and do damage. And all of that kind of comes into play when looking at everyone's particular, you know, abilities and setups. Like Luigi, for example, no health, but he's got a sniper rifle, so you put him at the back of the map and he can just pop people off from wherever.
Yeah,
there's just a crazy, crazy amount of depth. And in true Mario fashion, because if we're being completely honest, making a Mario game look super beautiful doesn't really seem like that large of a task, but it always looks good. This game looks great.
The worlds very crisp. Are so complex in this, or at least the world that we've seen so far. But as I was walking around, I was just having to explore, just look out in the distance because, you know, there's parts that it's a very narrow what you travel through, but they've built up everything around it so well. So you can see like this big, huge, you can see where you're going eventually in the world when you start it, which I think was a really nicely done addition. And it's a lot of
fun. Does it feel like each of the sides between the Mario and the rabbits feels fully like fleshed out? Like it's nothing feels tacked on.
No,
nope. I think it's actually pretty good. The rabbits world is very, I mean, I can't say I know it definitively, but I've played Rayman games, and so I kind of understand what rabbids are. to me, they're just like minions.
Yeah, that's how I look at
them. It's fine.
I look at them as adult themed minions.
Yeah. It's awesome. They're really, really cool. And I think in that respect, yeah, I think the worlds are pretty fleshed out. Like the warp pipes, for example, or warp pipes that are mixed with the rabbit. So there's like a little tongue with like little teeth on it. So whenever you go in those, that essentially is a warp pipe in the Mario world. There's coins. All the sound effects are the same. The music, holy crap. That's probably my favorite part of it, because it's not a Mario mixed, like it's not just a remixed Mario soundtrack. It's also Mario mashed together with Rabbids music, mashed together with some Rayman themes, all orchestrated by, his name is escaping me right now, but he's actually a foremost composer. And I think he composed the music for Donkey Kong 64, and possibly for Banjo. So he's done some great work for Nintendo already. And I mean, as far as all the Mario elements go, they're spot on, man. The sprites look great. The mannerisms of every character are great. And then the rabbits just add this layer of comedy that is sometimes missing in Mario games, unless you're talking to Toad, who's always freaking hilarious.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they mashed it together pretty damn well.
There was a moment where Peach encounters Peach Rabbit, and Peach Rabbit is not very happy that you have Peach here. And so she's like, I don't want you here. She's very jealous. You can tell she gets really jealous. And then she takes like these selfies of herself all the time. She always like pulls out her phone. So it's interesting to see like the modern day things coming through that we are familiar with and in this game. But it's awesome. I mean, I was blown away, and I like how they slowly add the complexity to what you're playing. So like for me, like XCOM is such a deterrent in that I know it's a challenging game and there's a lot of strategy involved, and that's held me back from jumping into it. And this one, the way that they introduced the mechanics, I think is really good. I know some people have talked about they feel like they take too long on the tutorial part, because you get like halfway through World 1 before you learn everything that you need to know. Like the skill trees aren't introduced until like 1.4, 1.5 or something like that.
Damn.
But I liked it that way because it allowed me to kind of get used to these different mechanics of the movement jumps and then the different attacks and having a secondary weapon and all that stuff before I got to, oh, wow, now I can like upgrade everything and make things better and more advanced. And it was nicely done, I felt. So
yeah, I can agree with the people saying that it takes too long, but it's also a kid's game, man.
Yeah, exactly.
How many kids play strategy games? Like not very many. So I think this is actually a very cool way to approach it too, like put strategy into a Mario and Rabbids game that little kids would enjoy picking up.
Yep.
But I think it's very tastefully done as well. The one thing I will say is, although it's nice to be able to kind of roam the worlds in a very kind of nostalgic way in terms of how it's laid out, like Super Mario World and the overworld kind of thing where you're hopping between point to point and then starting a level that way, I do think it's kind of limiting in your ability to actually feel like you're exploring. You only have your X-axis turn. Like, I want to be able to look up at stuff or look down at stuff.
Yeah.
To just kind of get a better glimpse of what's around me.
There's been moments where I wanted to, like, raise my camera or lower my camera down so I could see further back in a battle, and I couldn't do it. And it was kind of hard for me. But other than that, I mean, the camera is pretty good in the way that it operates as you're traveling through the world and making sure that it directs the camera for you at places you need to be looking at. I think it's only been a hindrance for me like once, which was good. But I mean, I've been pleased with the game. I'm really excited. I'm curious to see what happens as you unlock new worlds, how they bring, because you know, like you go through these different worlds and there's areas where you can get collectibles that you haven't learned this yet kind of thing. And I wonder how they're going to bring you back to those old worlds to get that stuff.
To reintroduce the missed key elements or the missed little nuggets.
Yeah.
That's cool. I believe that's... So they have challenges. I just unlocked them at the end of World 1. And they're basically like, kill 14 enemies in 3 turns. Or kill this many enemies without getting hit or something. So that's one way that I believe they're going to try and get people to go back to worlds. But I think the worlds in themselves are interesting enough to want to go back to. Yeah. Especially now that you know there's parts that you weren't able to explore.
Right.
Because of these hindrances. But I'm super digging this game, man. I probably sunk 3 hours into it in one day, but yeah. I haven't been able to pick it up since. But I'm excited to keep playing. And if any other company or really Nintendo themselves thinks moving forward to do more things like this, I'd be so happy. Either mashups with other universes or just kind of offbeat games that haven't really been explored in the Mario universe, I think they could really be pleasantly received by people. I mean, look at this one.
Yeah, it sounds refreshing to see that Ubisoft has finally like gotten a nice title that seems like it's fully fleshed out, fully made, enjoyable. It's got all the right mechanics and all the right atmosphere and environments. So yeah. That's good.
Yeah, a lot of passion in this one for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely, because I mean, for me, I didn't think that there would be anything really to look forward to until Super Mario Odyssey came out. But this is one of those games that's going to keep me beyond busy up until that point and probably onward. I mean, I'll be playing this game for a while, I can tell. It's a really, really solid game, and I can take it with me anywhere I want to go.
Oh, that's the most downplayed part of it. Like strategy games on the go, fuck yeah,
yeah.
No. Just play a quick match while you're sitting around. I was playing some yesterday on my couch.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's just perfect.
That's cool, man.
Super dig.
Super.
Me.
I was gonna say dig. I assume.
I'm gonna say super dig.
Super dig.
I went on record with Austin on this one, but. Freaking hot take, man. Mario Rabbids will have a higher Metacritic score than Destiny 2.
Oh, you think so?
It's got an 85.
Wow. Oh, man.
That's like right middle of the pack, man. Like I can definitely see Destiny 2 coming in with a fat like 83 or 84.
Yeah.
But it also has the 90 potential, right? So I'd say I'm actually on the losing side of this bet because I think there's more possibility that Destiny's in the 85, 86 range, which puts it just above. But I'm thinking it's going to do pretty well, Mario Rabbids versus that. And Game of the Year conversations won't win any, but it'll be in the strategy conversation and we'll definitely win some awards for Dark Horse type things. But
I find
love it, man.
One last thing I want to mention is what I find so fascinating about this game is that we never knew this was going to exist until June.
Right.
And then here we are in September, you know, not even 6 months later, and it's out. So,
and we're balling on it, man.
And we are. I wish more companies did things like this, because I feel like it was such a nice surprise. Rather than sitting there waiting forever for a game to come out, like we get this announcement, they reveal a little bit about it, and then here we are not very long after, and it worked. And then Fallout was the same way. You know, they announced that back in E3 and then brought it out in the fall. I wish more stuff happened like that, because it's just, you know, you just got a little bit of anticipation, and then when it comes out, you're like, man, that was good.
Bam.
Happy. Yeah. So.
Devin, you got to get it, man. Whenever you get the chance,
do
grab
it.
Well, I'll probably just download it while we're here. So if we take a quick break, I'll go get it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you want to talk about any Little Nightmares or anything?
Yeah, man. The Little Nightmares DLC, yeah. I finally got to sit down and get my hands on it. Called The Secrets of the Maw. And for what it is, I'll go ahead and give my weaknesses up front.
Okay.
It's too short.
How long is it?
Maybe 30 to 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Well, the game itself...
I mean, the game isn't long. Anyway,
the game itself is an hour.
Okay. Oh.
Maybe more.
Oh.
The game itself is maybe like an hour to 2 hours, depending on how good you are at puzzle platforming.
So 5 hours for me.
Okay, got it. Yeah, 10 hours for Brett. It's going to be great, Brett. You're going to get your money's worth. 10 hours. But the DLC is pretty short, but man, does it deliver. You play an unnamed child. I don't know who he is. But it keeps a lot of the same elements from the original game. So you have the boy who also has his own lighting device. Like the original character, Six, she has a little lighter. And that's how you can see in dark areas. Well, he has a little flashlight, which he can aim around, which is really freaking cool. You're exploring some of the same areas that you did in the original game, but you're also seeing some really cool new areas, like a nice big flooded basement, and there's things in the water that are creepy and eerie, and it's so freaking cool. I've played it twice already. I'm on a third playthrough now because I'm trying to get the story bits. I haven't quite nailed it down just yet of what the significance is of this character, and I have some ideas, but I will save those for smarter people than me.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, man. Worth every penny.
How much was it? Because the game itself was only like $15, $20.
The game itself was $20.
Okay.
Granted, I'm going to say I got mine on sale.
Yeah.
So I think I paid $10 or $15 for mine.
Right.
But the DLC was $10.
Okay.
And that's okay. Also, I'm getting the actual full DLC pack. They have two more scheduled to come out.
Gotcha.
So Tarsier Studios is freaking nailing it. If you're into creepy, eerie puzzle platformers, then I highly suggest getting this as well as the DLC, because it is going to deliver. The music is on point. The mechanics are fun and engaging. There's only like one enemy in every level you go to, and this time it's called the Grandma. Grandma's creepy. Grandma's creepy as shit. And I was playing with a group of people sitting in my living room, and as they're watching me like try to scale these different areas in this level, this creepy waterlogged basement, they're just seeing like the ripples in the water come towards me, and everyone's just flipping shit like watching a horror movie. So yeah.
Wow.
It creates a hell of a lot of tension. I'll give it that.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I'll give the Luis super dig.
Super dig.
It's there we a go. Super dig.
I've added that to the list for sure. Super delay.
Super delay.
And super, what is it?
Ditch.
What? Ditch.
Super ditch.
You're being a super ditch right now.
That sounds.
I would give super ditch that game I played last.
You're such a ditch. A
couple weeks ago.
That sounds really cool. Really quick, just so some of our audience members can kind of draw a comparison. What would you compare Little Nightmares to? Is there any direct comparison to
Absolutely. If you've played Limbo, if you've played Inside, if you've played those, you know, 2D side-scrolling puzzle platformer-style game, this is really where Little Nightmares finds its home. Now, it does it in a bit more slightly isometric, so you do have a little bit of like a 3D platform for which you can go, you know, you can go to the depth of field and go in and out and around with everything, but there's it's as short as it is, it delivers a whole lot from that style of play. So if you played Limbo, where you can power through the game in, you know, a couple hours, Inside was a little bit longer. But this is right in that same wheelhouse.
Nice.
Very cool.
Awesome. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our game segment. Stay tuned for our video game news. And because it is a new month, we have free games for the month of September. So
ooh,
we'll be
man.
Right back.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is a pretty good lineup, too.
Hell yeah. We'll be back.
No break.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Podcast.
Oh,
sorry.
My
I'm
gosh.
So
Dorianator,
so
you dick.
I'm so sorry. I couldn't
you
help it.
Dick.
Oh, man.
It's okay.
We need to ban Dorianator.
Yeah,
not
seriously.
You as a person. Just
yeah, no, the
term.
Name? Absolutely.
No, I think the name is awesome.
You're the only one. You are literally the only one.
You guys
one.
Never like anything I come up with. You never
right.
like what I
you're
come
right.
up with.
You're right. Tell stories.
Fuck you.
Now tell gaming okay. news.
All right. So, hello, everybody. It's a new month. It is September. And you know what that means.
New games.
Free video games.
New games.
New games. Yes. So if you are a proud owner of the PS4 or the Xbox One, soon to be Xbox One X, if you decide to get that, mm-hmm. we have some free games coming out for September. Starting with the PlayStation 4, we have four, two of which are cross-play with Vita. We have Infamous Second Son, which was a launch title for the PlayStation 4. I played it. It was awesome. A lot of fun. We have a game called Strike Vector X. And then we have the two Vita games, We Are Doomed and Hateful Boyfriend. I keep wanting to say hateful, but it's actually spelled hateful.
Is it hatiful?
Probably.
Hatiful?
Hatiful.
There's no E hateful. Or I in there.
Hateful?
It makes no sense.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
Hateful? I will do all kinds of...
I don't know.
Whatever.
Spider just attacked me. It was awesome.
And he's not even doing anything about it. He's just looking at it.
No, he's gone now.
He's gone. You're going to let him live? You're going to let him or her live?
Yeah, I'm going to let him live because they capture mosquitoes and
gross.
Their netting of stuff.
We care about animals here at the Inner Gamer.
We do.
So we don't kill spiders when they're around.
Yep.
I'll burn the goddamn house down.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. Anyway, so we have on the Xbox One, we have four games coming out. Forza Motorsport 5, Oxenfree, which didn't you just buy Oxenfree?
I did.
Okay. Well, now you have it for free.
Yeah.
So, Merry Christmas. Twice.
Merry Christmas in September.
Hydro Thunder Hurricane. I don't know what that is. And then Battlefield 3.
Battlefield 3. That's cool. Hydro Thunder is basically like a Sea-Doo game, I think.
Oh,
water
really?
Sports.
Yeah.
Like fast. Like
Wave Race.
Like Wave Race.
Did you ever play Wave Race on the 64?
I did.
Oh, man. That game was awesome. I feel like that's the only like jet ski game that's ever made it in anybody's minds.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful experience.
You do a backflip and the announcer would lose his shit. Oh, yeah. Backflip! Sorry.
Oh, man. I saw yesterday at GameSpot put up their back this many years ago thing, and which if you guys follow our Facebook page, make sure you check out our Today in Gaming series, which is a similar concept. But
shameless plug. Continue.
We have... Oh, my gosh. Sorry. I had a spider crawl on my leg at that point. I don't know where he went, but he's around here somewhere, and he keeps attacking me. Anyway, so they had an article that came out that said Tony Hawk's Pro Skater came out 26 years ago, and it was actually 18 years ago, and they were like 8 years off, and I thought it was pretty hilarious. Did you get him?
I did.
Nice. Very cool.
Dang. Completely goes against what we just said.
I don't give a shit. It's a spider.
You killed a spider. It sounded like a Brett problem, and you made it a Devin problem, and now it's a problem for, I don't know, the Earth to
the
decompose
earth.
Him.
Whatever.
Anyway, so those are the free games we have coming out this month. Let's talk about some video game news.
Video
in
game
this
news.
Segments, we talk about all the gaming news headlines that you guys need to know from the week in the gaming industry. And real quick, I want to mention that Sony, on the follow-up to Oculus and HTC Vive dropping their prices, has announced a price drop for the PSVR. So you can now get the PSVR starting yesterday or 2 days ago. You can get the bundle for $449, and that's going to include the PlayStation VR Worlds game as well as the kit itself. And then that's a $50 price drop. And then also you can get the camera plus the PSVR system for $399, which means that the camera comes for free. So if you guys wanted PSVR and want to jump into it, they've dropped the price a little bit, so you can go out there and pick it up.
Sweet.
Who's excited about that? You gonna buy one?
A PSVR bundle? Not bundle. Yet.
Yeah. They haven't had a lot of games coming out for it as of late. I've been kind of sad. I mean, there's been a few good titles, but
I'm waiting for like just that one
crazy
thing. I'm waiting for that one game to be announced that it's going to just make me go, yeah, that.
Skyrim VR. So anyways, Let's talk about the Switch. They had an indie showcase in which they announced indie games coming out for this year and on into next year to get people excited about what's coming. And there are a few of wonderful excitement and things. One is Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes. Has anybody seen this or heard of this?
Yeah, No More Heroes is from the Wii.
Yeah, but it says Travis Strikes Again. Looks like Stranger Things. It's interesting.
Yeah, it seems like I don't know anything about this game, but of the people who do, this was the biggest announcement from this.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is pretty insane.
Yeah, people lost their fucking minds when talking about No More Heroes.
I mean, that's awesome. And then Kentucky Route Zero.
I think his name is Travis Touchdown, which is like the most American name you can probably have.
It is Travis
have.
Touchdown. Yeah, that's right. Travis the makes the return of Travis Touchdown and Suda 51 in the director's chair.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then we have a Kentucky Route Zero, which is a game that I have seen a lot of. It's a PC game currently, and it has gotten a huge cult following, basically. And it's something that was like episodic that was released over periods of time.
Right.
And now they're bringing it to the Switch. And I think I'll actually get it at that point because it is supposed to be very, very good. Good story, all that stuff. So we'll have that in the TV edition with the long-awaited final installment, which is awesome. And then Super Meat Boy. Any Super Meat Boy fans out there?
I love Super Meat Boy.
Yeah?
Good game.
Now you can play it on your Switch, so that'll be cool.
Sweet.
You excited about that? Super Meat Boy Forever, as they call it. It's a sequel to Super Meat Boy coming to the Switch. So this isn't just a remake or a re-release of Super Meat Boy. This is the next Super Meat Boy.
The next Super Meat Boy.
And then we have a Shovel Knight, King of Cards. This is the last part of the Shovel Knight Treasure Trove collection. The focus is on the King Knight, and it's a prequel story coming out in early 2018. Louise, you know most about Shovel Knight. Are you excited about this game?
Yeah, I'm still working my way through the last DLC, but another prequel is very cool. And King Knight's probably one of the funnier characters in the kind of collective of all of the knights in the game. More Shovel Knight is a more good game. So I'm excited that it's coming out and that everyone who plays Shovel Knight, either on PC, PS4, Xbox, or on the Switch, will get to enjoy it. So I have the treasure trove. I'm going to be getting this when it comes out directly. I'll let you guys know how it is.
Awesome.
Damn right.
And then we have SteamWorld Dig 2, which I've seen this everywhere, and it's supposed to be a lot of fun. And it's interesting that it's got SteamWorld Dig in the name, because if it's not a dig in our review system, I'd be sad, because we'd be giving a game with the name Dig, not a dig. So hopefully it's a dig and not a delay or a ditch. But SteamWorld Dig 2, it's coming soon.
It should be good, man. SteamWorld Dig is really cool, and it's super stylized.
Yeah,
it looks really nice type thing. Very cool.
I like the visuals. And then we have a golf game. Golf Story is coming out. This is a golf meets role-playing game, and there's a quote-unquote dramatic story in the mix along with a lot of golf challenges, and it's a Switch exclusive, so I don't know much about this other than there is a story, and you're playing golf and role-playing at the same time. This is a magical
thing.
It's so
bizarre, but all right, cool. Yeah.
Dude, it looks like Stardew Valley meets, I don't know why I would know a golf game that looks like this, but...
Right.
It's freaking, like, I'm watching it right now, the story trailer, and it just looks like some dude walking around town, and then there's randomly, like, some golfing happening. I'm like, what's going on, dude? It looks funny as hell. And apparently there's a dramatic story in the mix. Like, a dramatic golf story makes no sense, but if it works, holy crap.
I wonder if there's any relationship with this and, like, Maple's story and things like that. Like, if the story is actually part of that, that'd be interesting. Moving through this list a little bit more, we have games like Morphe's Law, which is a little multiplayer game coming out on the Switch as well. And it's a team of giants who fight to absorb each other's body mass, shrinking or expanding their body parts accordingly. Then we have Sausage Sports Club. I know Devin's excited about that.
What the fuck, man?
I'm just kidding.
Really? I'm going to beat you with this mic. Sausage Sports Club. Get out of my face.
Dude, do you know what this is? This is, so there's like three or four games that I've been kind of monitoring. They all stem from Gang Beasts, but this is like a Gang Beast sports game. Like every animal is like super floppy.
That's why I think Devin will like it.
Oh,
it's
is like that Gang is Beast. That why you think I'd like it? Shut the fuck up. What's the
Dude,
next
it looks
game?
Hilarious.
It does it look pretty hilarious. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I want to have something like this because Gang Beasts is obviously awesome, and you have these little floppy animals, little dogs and chickens and things like that fighting each other, which could be interesting. They're competing on reality television. That'll be fun. Yono and the Celestial Elephants. It's an adventure game coming out in October, and it is you play an elephant who not only uses its trunk to open chests, but throw explosives. And the funny thing is they say that Yono is the bomb because, you know, he's an elephant that throws explosives. So he's like the bomb, you know, get that? It's funny.
No, I don't get it. Please explain it more, Brett.
It's pretty funny. And then Polybridge is coming out. So,
nice.
Louise wrote an article about that. You can check it out on our website, theinnergamer.net/read. That
kind
will be
exciting.
On the Switch.
And it has touchscreen controls, so it should be a really fun game to play. I wonder if they're going to add anything to the game now that it's on consoles for the first time.
I bet they'll do some at bonus levels or something at least.
It looks pretty tight, dude. This game is, I put 10 hours into it, and I'm not even like a quarter of the way done with the first level.
So wow.
Puts
really?
Perspective in.
Dang. Yeah.
Super, super awesome looking game, especially on the Switch, and it plays really cool too.
Nice. All right. Last three games I'm going to whip through here real quick. One is called Wolverblade, which is a throwback co-op beat-em-up action game set in ancient Britain where you are, it's a game that is coming out on the Switch in September. And yeah, it looks pretty cool. Then we have Nine Parchments. It's another co-op game about casting spells at a bunch of monsters and wizards coming out this holiday season. And then lastly, we have Lightfingers, which is a turn-based multiplayer game where up to four players compete on a magically enhanced game board. So that's everything.
Magically enhanced game board.
That Switch came out and announced. I know, right? That's a lot of stuff. So that's in the mix of all the other big titles that are coming out with the Switch. So we're getting a lot. Earlier this year, we were like, man, there's nothing. Now we're like...
drowning in games.
I don't know what to do with myself. There's so many. So that'll be cool. Next story we have is 343 Industries. They are the creators of Halo 4, Halo 5. And did they make any Halos before that? I don't think they did. Did they? Did they do Reach? No. Did they do ODST? I can't remember. Anyway, 343 Industries, they are the Halo guys that work for Microsoft, and they are currently working with Microsoft. As you all know, we haven't heard from them in a new Halo game in a while, and they are working on some VR AR games for future titles. So they're working very closely with Microsoft on this, so we might see them produce some virtual reality AR things in the future. So we still don't know what Microsoft is doing with virtual reality or AR other than their HoloLens. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of hardware we see next year, because I would bet we would see some hardware coming from them.
It'd be about
time. On the cusp of this. Yeah. Because everybody said the Xbox One X was going to be VR ready, and it is VR ready, but they didn't bring any VR for it. So they still have to announce what that might be. So that'll be kind of cool. Let's talk about some Destiny 2.
Yeah!
It's coming out. We have at the end part here, I'm actually just going to ignore that last part because we basically know it's coming out. Destiny 2 is the one game coming out next week. It comes out on September 6th.
Yep.
So as you're listening to this, it'll be coming out tomorrow on Xbox and PS4, and then on October 24th for the PC. There is going to be a raid, and Bungie's been very hush-hush about this because they don't want everybody to, like, figure out the raid before it comes out. So 1 week after the game comes out, they will launch the raid, and you won't know anything about that raid until the day it comes out. So that is coming on September 13th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Get your team together and raid.
I think it's going to be taking back the tower.
You think so?
I think it's going to be delayed. It won't be delayed, but I think it's just, we can't get it uploaded, and then it's actually going to be like at 12 or something.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, though, man. Raids are definitely the funnest part.
They're intense. I'm curious to see what they've been kind of brewing up, because the last one had a raid, right? The last DLC, what was that called? The Rise of Iron, that had a raid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never played that one, which I was sad about.
It's friggin' intense.
Yeah. So this will be cool. I'm excited to see what this is. And then after that, DLC has already been kind of rumored and revealed to be something coming out in December, and it is called The Curse of Osiris.
Oh.
Yes. So if you guys remember Trials of Osiris from the first game, this is about the Osiris. And it's going to add a patrol zone on Mercury. That's all we know. But it's going to be a story-based DLC around Osiris. So expect some good stuff.
There's a lot of people who I'm sure are going to be very hyped up about this. I didn't do a whole lot of Trials of Osiris just because that shit was next level hard.
Oh, it was so difficult.
Like, those I've played, like, good people in multiplayer, like, from, you know, an Overwatch standpoint, people who've had amazing talent and stuff. But Trials of Osiris was on a whole new level of out of my fucking league. These guys are good. Like, these people who play it, there's been like I know there's been like a husband wife duo who did really freaking well. There was a really popular one of like these three brothers who just played amazingly. So, man, it's
Well, they say that there's gonna be a new social space as well, which is taking place on the lighthouse, which apparently for Destiny 1 players, the only people that have seen the lighthouse are those that have flawless records in player versus player gauntlet Trials of Osiris.
Yeah, people who are really fucking good at the game.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting to me because, yeah, this for some people, it'll be the first time they've ever seen it.
Correct.
In person.
Correct.
Now you can just hang out there. So it'll be pretty cool. Louise, are you getting Destiny?
I think I am. It's kind of a, it's one of those PC, PS4, I don't know which one I'm going to get. But I also don't anticipate playing like a whole lot of it, at least past getting to a decent light level and running some raids. But that's really the big issue. I will get it. And again, all this stuff is super cool and welcome. But sometimes you just got to play that 4K, man.
That's
and
true.
On my PC, I can do that.
I know. I'm kind of, well, I've decided I got it on the PS4. I'll probably get on the PC, and then I'll eventually sell the PS4 version. Because I know once everybody gets on a PC, then they'll drop off the PS4. And that's where it's meant to be played. So that's where it's going to happen.
Okay.
Speaking of console systems,
yeah,
and their demise, Xbox One, the official original Xbox One that came out, is being discontinued because now there is an Xbox One S and Xbox One X. So there's really no need to buy an Xbox One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor brick. That thing was enormous.
It was so big. It was like the original Xbox. It was crazy. But it did work, and I still have one, and I don't use it at all. But I may or may not invest in a new one if they announce some really good games for it. But they might not, so we'll see. But you are looking into an Xbox One X, right, Devin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know I need, I mean, I've already mentioned that mine's, you know, partially due to the fact that I need more space, but also I'm getting myself ready for that 4K resolution.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah, son. Bah, bah, bah.
That'll be awesome. All right. So remember No Man's Sky?
Oh, you mean that game that everyone regretted buying?
Yeah. And then I ended up,
I'm going to say that every time we bring it up.
I bought it again, but I haven't played it yet. Louise, you bought it, didn't you?
Yeah, I still have it.
Yeah.
It's good now, man.
It's good.
It's actually really fun to play. Yeah. It plays in 60 FPS on a PS4 Pro, so.
That is awesome.
What's up? It feels pretty good, but.
That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah, it's a real good game, but what about No Man's Sky, my man?
Yeah, so Sean Murray is the guy behind, he's the man behind the mask of No Man's Sky. Actually, not behind the mask, he was more in front of everybody for the entire time leading up to this game and was the person that was creating this game. So when it came out and was received very poorly, he is also the guy that got all the flack, including death threats, about the fact that this game was not what it was supposed to be. And Peter Molyneux, the man behind a lot of big games, didn't he make a Civilization? Isn't he the Civ guy?
Definitely not.
Okay, I'm totally
like,
off.
No, he makes those are good games.
No. Peter Molyneux, he's like he makes all kinds of like strategy games, but I can't remember which series he's famed for.
The gods, where you play the god one.
I mean, goddess. I played that.
No.
I mean, that was a good, that is one that he worked on.
I want
on.
To say it was Good and Evil, but that's obviously wrong.
Fable.
Yeah, he's the guy.
Fable, Black
guy
and White.
Fable.
Black and White. There that's what it was. Black yeah. and White.
So, I mean, he's known really well. Like, he's thought very highly of in the game industry. And he made a game back in 2013 called Goddess, where you were basically a god character that controlled these people. And you would terraform the world and things of that nature to improve and make their lives worse. Actually, you were the fate of them. And Black and White was a similar type of game, but people didn't like that very well. He was trying something new. He got a lot of scrutiny for that. So he came to Sean Murray and was like, look, let me tell you something. I've been in the game industry for a long time. And as a result of that, you know, this is going to happen. You're going to get bad flack. So there was a point where Peter Molyneux, because of all the negative flack he got for the last game he made, he said he wasn't going to talk to the press anymore. He was like, I'm done. I'm not going to talk to them anymore. Then you realize after the fact that, you know, that's not necessarily the way to go. I should just, you know, continue going about it and know that there is going to be negative reactions to the games that I make. And I can't always make a good game. You're not going to make good stuff all the time. So for him, he wanted to sit down with Sean Murray and basically tell him, hey, don't let this get you down and that this is not the end of the line for you just because of all of this that happened. You can get back up and pick it up and you learn from these mistakes. So he's now working on a game, Peter Molyneux is, that he's very, very happy about, very excited about, and finally feels like he has this passion to create again that he hasn't had in a long time. And it's because he kind of, you know, accepted the fact that you can't always be perfect. And that's just the way it is. So he's learned.
I don't buy it.
Oh, you're a terrible person.
That's fair. But yeah. My whole point behind it is like, yeah, you're going to catch bad flack. And yes, there's always going to be people who don't like your game or who don't think that your game is worth playing. And they're going to tell you all kinds of BS. But really, like the complaints that people had with Sean Murray and the complaints that people had with Peter Molyneux all came from, look, you promised us this. You said your game was this.
Right.
And then it was not that. It was actually a big pile of shit. So, you know, for an overpromise, underdeliver, that doesn't come out of nowhere. That comes from you telling me something about what you said the game was going to be and it not being that. So, I mean, yes, good for them for wanting to keep their optimism and keep their drive to want to keep making games. Great, do it. Make a good fucking game, first off, and then two, don't sell me a bag of shit.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I didn't buy the bag of shit. You guys bought the bag of shit.
I never paid for it, so we're good.
You bought it fucking twice, and you got lucky that you got both refunded.
Exactly. Magic happens. Magic happens. But yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, because like when it comes to these games being, I mean, you got to be careful what you announce. And that's why we talked about early access games a couple weeks ago and how those games tend to fall into the trap of getting all this money and then starting to have feature creep become a problem for them. And they start promising more and more things. And then it gets to the point where they can't deliver on said things. And then their rankings go from like way up here down to like way down here. And that, I feel like for him, Sean Murray, if he had come out and said, okay, this game, this is what it is. It's an exploration game. And that's all. That's what you do. It would have been received differently than them promising it to be this open world combat. They had all these other things that came about it. And what it really came down to was it was just a explore and craft kind of game. That's ultimately what it was. But it wasn't sold as that. So messaging, moral of the story is messaging is very important. So make sure your messaging is on point. As much as you can.
As much as you can.
Yeah. So yeah, last thing we got here. Dota 2 is getting negative reviews on Steam.
What? Is it even possible?
And there's one reason for it. Because there's no Half-Life 3.
Oh.
That's gee, so it's petty, almost as if, but I love it.
It's almost as if people were pissed off that they made a fucking card game that no one asked for.
I think they are. So all of a sudden, like, I think it's ever since Artifact got announced, which is the Dota 2 card game that's been coming out, people are giving Dota 2 bad reviews because they think it's Dota's fault that Valve never made Half-Life 3 or is maybe never going to make Half-Life 3. Who knows? We might see it in one day or another, but people are pissed and the public has come out and said, hey.
Steam is the reason why. Because Steam is super profitable. Why would they even need to make another game?
That's true. You think they'd have somebody internally that would just be willing to work on like they're making all this money, like spin off a team to start building games again, because that's like, that was their bread and butter. And then they started becoming a service instead, but they did make good games and they're really, really talented at it. I feel like they're doing a disservice to themselves to not continue with that. I mean, they got the money to do it. I'm sure they got the team to do it. I don't know why they don't pursue that still.
Yeah, I think they just kind of have to reorganize. And it's kind of tough, too, with Half-Life 3 because it's been talked about for so long. It's almost impossible to meet the expectations.
It was kind of like the Duke Nukem treatment that happened.
Yeah. Or maybe just nobody in the office wants to work on it because apparently they have some kind of company culture there where if you want to work on something, you basically just...
Yeah.
Make it happen.
They have all their desks on wheels and they just get to walk into rooms that they're just like, oh, I think I'll go work on this today. And they'll just wheel their desk into an office that is working on game XYZ. So they'll just fucking do that for whatever. And I don't know.
So you know what's probably happened is they probably have made Half-Life 3, but they're so busy playing it in their office that they don't want to release it. they just play it themselves whenever they have some off time and just hide it away from the world. It's like, sorry, guys.
No, I agree with Luis that this game is like, it's, we're talking decades in the making at this point. I'm sure right. They're like fucking terrified. Like, we have to make this game
right.
Immaculate. This game has to be just two shades shy of perfect. And if they don't, they know that we are going to mutiny and go and just burn their studio to the ground.
It won't just be Dota 2 that gets bad reviews.
Oh, absolutely.
It'll just like spread to all the titles. Yeah, I just thought that was funny. It was an interesting little article about the fact that people really obviously want Half-Life 3, and they're going to do whatever it takes to hopefully try and get it at some point. But I don't know if we'll ever see the light of day with Half-Life 3. But I hope. You know, there's still a glimmer of hope somewhere, but it's fading away. But anyway, that's going to be it for our news this week. If there's something that we missed, or if you have something to share on one of these articles, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. We will be back here in a moment with our discussion topic after the break.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
So, our discussion topic this week is going to be on environmental storytelling. So, what is environmental storytelling?
I think when you get the term environmental storytelling, you really are talking about how is the story being told in the game.
Right.
And there's a huge multitude of options out there in the video game world of how games have their story told to you. You can think of things like Final Fantasies, where there's a start to finish. There's crazy mind-boggling games out there in the indie market, and we'll talk about some of them here shortly. But there's just a huge array of developers out there who are telling stories in very unique ways. And I think that's something that we're really starting to get to explore here in like this last decade.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that this term, like environmental storytelling, I feel like didn't exist until, I want to say, 5-ish years ago.
That's fair.
In my mind, when a little known game called Gone Home came out.
Yeah.
I feel like even though it has existed prior to that, I feel like since that game came out and like had these far reaching, like just opened up people's eyes to,
right.
Wow, you can tell narrative through experiences in the world. Mm-hmm. That was what kind of launched other games into incorporating this into the point now where we have like AAA titles that we see it everywhere. So
it's now in the forefront.
Exactly. So we've done some research breaking down different types of environmental storytelling games and how they tell a story in different types of ways.
And by no means is this the full extent of all of them, but these are just some that we think here that are probably the most impacting
when
it comes to environmental storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. So our first set of examples are coming from games such as Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, games like Little Nightmares, and games like Inside. And these games basically tell a story through the atmosphere,
right.
And through the atmospheric storytelling, essentially.
Yeah.
And you have been playing a lot of Little Nightmares lately. So tell me a little bit about how Little Nightmares tells a story or just engages you into the world through the atmosphere.
So, you know,
the environment.
When you think about something with being atmosphere as an element when you're creating a game, I mean, atmosphere sets a lot up. Like you think when you're first launching like a game like Fallout for the first time, or when you're first looking at Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, atmosphere is everything, right? It sets the tone. It sets the groundwork for what you're about to be playing. However, in those other games, there's dialogue, there's NPCs, there's all these other different things that factor into telling you what's going on. What's beautiful about these games like Little Nightmares or Inside, Little Nightmares more specifically, is there's no dialogue.
Right.
There's not one single spoken word, period. Wow. It's all atmosphere. It is the colors, the shadowing and lighting effects. It's the music. All of that sensory that you can take in that's going to essentially set your mood. But additionally, you're seeing your story being told through that atmosphere. In Little Nightmares, it takes place on the level. It's called the Maw. and it's this weird underwater ship. And as you're exploring, you're seeing dark, dank pipes, and you're seeing these like waterlogged clothes everywhere. And it just, it really gives you, like, you're starting to infer, like, man, this place is very dirty and old and not well kept.
Right.
And that kind of inference that you get from that atmosphere, you're starting to draw your own conclusions as a player. And I love that kind of storytelling that this game provides you as a player.
And what's interesting about that, I think, is you know, your interpretation of that atmosphere and what you're seeing is going to be different than most other, I mean, everybody else.
Like,
they're going to have a slightly different interpretation on that, that experience. And, you know, like, I played Limbo back in the day when that first came out. That, like, blew my mind because, again, like Little Nightmares, it didn't have any dialogue or anything like that. But you're traveling through this world, and the way that they created it, they had this, like, soft, soft focus kind of look to it.
Yeah.
And it was all silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that puts you in this mode of, you know, this wasn't real life. This was a different realm entirely, because this isn't what real life looks like. You know, it's completely different. But it was so well done to not only let you know that you're in a different place, but also set up the tone of just eerie creepiness that there didn't have to be anything there, but you were just naturally kind of scared because of, everything was all one color, you know? And that's freaky.
Well, and kind of, as you mentioned, there's so many different parts in that game where people had different opinions of what to take from it. And, and you know, you get the brain slug in Limbo, and it would force you to walk a certain direction.
Yeah.
And until you got into the light, that's when your character would change direction. And that was such a heavy debated thing of, like, what is that mind slug, and why does it not like the light, and what happens in that in this scenario? So that's something I've always loved about games like this, and especially with Inside. There's a huge debate of what the actual story is when it comes to the game of Inside, because, again, no dialogue, all music, all color palette, all what it is that you take as the player, you're drawing the inference and you're having to come to conclusions, and you can talk about that with other players. I still don't know what the actual story of Inside is, other than, well, I'm some weird blobby thing on the shores of a lake, so this is weird.
Yeah, and those like mysterious things that come after you that, you know, they're chasing after you, but you don't really know why they're chasing after
you.
Like, that's just such a strange
thing. Yeah, it's like, what's going on there?
Yeah, exactly. So last week we reviewed Hellblade's Senua's Sacrifice, and I wish Austin was here for this part because he played a lot of that. We haven't played it yet, but I know from seeing trailers and watching videos of this game, that is another game that has absolutely no instruction, no UI, but there is dialogue. However, what you're experiencing is the world around you, and things are, like, you have voices in your head that are telling you, like, oh, go this way, no, go this way. And there's all these conflicting messages that are being sent to you. And, like, to me, that is such a cool way to guide you through a world, but also, you know, confuse you. But it's the guidance that they're giving you is, I mean, it's not like an arrow telling you, heck, hey, go this way.
The direction that games used to give you was so black and white, and now it's this meshed, really weird world of gray of, is the voice in your head giving you correct direction, or is it not?
No, it's really, really interesting. Those types of games for me are really cool, because when the mood is such an important part of a game. And if there's no mood and there's no, like, atmosphere, like when I first jumped into Uncharted: The Lost Legacy, which isn't necessarily like this kind of storytelling, but the mood, you could tell what kind of game this was when you entered in that first level of Uncharted: The Lost Legacy.
Yeah.
And it's dark, and you're in these dark alleyways, and it's completely different feel of any other Uncharted game. And just that setting alone told so much to me about this character and what we were about to, you know, what was coming in the future.
Right.
So that was really cool. Let's talk about a different type of storytelling, which would be essentially like exploratory investigative storytelling. Mm-hmm. And the first game I think is a good example to talk about this, which you have a lot of experience with, is Bloodborne.
Absolutely.
So tell me about how Bloodborne tells a story through the environment in this investigative approach.
Thank you for asking, Brett. No, I mean, there's
20 hours later.
Not 20, more like 18, but let's be fair. No, as anybody who's listened to this podcast, I'm a huge fan of From Software, and that style of narrative and storytelling from the atmosphere has just been, to me, one of the most absolutely brilliant ways of telling a story. Bloodborne, right, in particular, because all of the different characters that you have, if you've never played them, you have to think about it this way. You have a little bit of a tutorial and you have a little bit of story that you're given. But for the most part, you collect your items like your weapon or your health items or your gear that you wear. Each of them has a description and each of them has a story to go along with it. So you kill one of the bosses, you can get his gear, and you find out that he used to be a high-ranking member of the healing church in the world of Yharnam in Bloodborne.
How does it tell you that?
When you go into the item, and you know, when you first pick up an item,
reading or whatever, yeah, of that item, like
exactly. There's lore to the items that you pick up. So when you think about it, like any other RPG, you pick up an item, let's say the chest piece to a piece of armor, and it gives you all the stats. It tells you, oh, it's resistant to fire, or it's got really good electricity resistance. And then you hit one of the buttons and it scrolls over to the lore side of the item. So one of them, the Henrique set, Bloodborne fans will love this, but Henrique was one of the hunters who lived an abnormally long time, and he was a very good friend of Father Gascoigne. Well, he eventually had to kill another hunter named Darkbeast Parle. And in the game, Darkbeast Parle is an electric, like, souped up monster beast thing. So he, when you see, like, yeah, cool, this armor gave me electricity damage resistance, but then you see why it had electricity resistance.
Oh.
It's because he had to go kill another hunter. And see?
Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant. I love that kind of investigative. This is my favorite type of atmospheric storytelling, is that investigation piece of it. Bethesda is very good at it with their Fallouts and Skyrim.
Right, right.
When you go and, like, you read stories about, like in Skyrim, you read some of the stories about, like, the vampires and who they are and why you never see them. And then you actually go and find some of their dens and you're like, holy shit, this is why we don't see them.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn did something similar to that, in which I thought was really interesting, in that, you know, this was a world that is set in the future, but it had this whole prehistoric, mm-hmm, like going back to the caveman days, in a way, like the
time spiraling
days.
Backwards. Almost.
Yeah, and you know, you never knew why, so they just thrusted you into this world, but then you find out quickly that this is a world full of machines, mm-hmm, but you don't have any answers to this. So as you explore, and you have to explore to get these story bits, they have these like viewpoints, vantage points in the area, and when you go up to one, it like puts a hologram on top of this space you're looking at that's like all ruined and destroyed, and they show you, here's what the days of old look like. So here's this old junky, like half standing building, but then you realize it was like a massive, gorgeous, like place of wonder. And you just see the time differences, and it's so fascinating to like see that. And then when you go down into underground, you have this like focus thing that's basically like augmented reality that lets you see like audio logs and stuff, and they're played out through the world that you're in, so you can see the people interacting in that space and what they were doing at this particular time. And that's how they tell the story throughout most of the game, to reveal what was happening back then. It's not just here's a cutscene that tells you what's going on. You have to go out and find it for yourself.
And that's one of the things I love about that is, you know, you can watch a cutscene all day long, and while that may be fun for some people, for me personally, I like the idea of me going out and my hard work actually pays off by getting really cool nuggets of the story. So like, you know, you saying that you see this old dilapidated building and then you get to reconstruct it with, you know, the technology and see, oh, this used to be a wonderful place of worship for this specific type of animal. How cool is that? And like, it just, it really makes the world more lived in and it makes your efforts even better.
And it rewards you for discovery. You
Division
know, like going
for all
out.
Of its faults.
I was about to bring that up because I remember you were saying a lot about that.
Yeah, Division for all of its faults did something very similar as well, where you got to see what happened in the city prior to the outbreak, and you got to see what happened when you would find these little like audio logs from phones, or you got to actually reconstruct a crime scene and do the whole CSI thing and watch things happen in this weird pixelated way. And it was really friggin' cool. The rest of the game was not so much, but that part was really cool when you got to see like some of the factions, like the firemen, seeing some of them interact with the public early on. You're like, wow, these guys were really trying to do the right thing by burning away the disease and the diseased, but it obviously spiraled out of control. And it's really cool to see that in the game itself. So that's it's my favorite type of story, atmospheric storytelling. And I am very appreciative when more games do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's, you know, there's definitely a place for cutscenes, and cutscenes are really cool, but there's something special to the idea of, you know, like we mentioned earlier, your experience of that story nugget is going to be different than my experience of that story nugget, because you may find it at a different point in time than I do. So you're piecing together information that isn't necessarily consecutive per se, or you just may not find it. So like, you learn something that I don't know. So like, if we talk about the game, you're like, man, did you know about
this
thing? And I'm like, no, I didn't know that.
See, what I find brilliant about that is some of these games will actually fail in doing something like that. For instance, like Destiny, the first Destiny was trying to deliver story bits while in a massive firefight. So players are missing the story as they're, I mean, it may not be exploratory in the same sense of the word, but I mean, it's a difficult balance that developers have to really put into their games. Like, how much of this action do we want to have happening while the players are receiving these nugget bits of story? So exploratory is difficult to pull off, but when you can pull it off well,
it's magical.
Man, it pays off tenfold.
Really good. Yeah. That's cool. So so let's move to another example of environmental storytelling. And this one is, again, as we mentioned in the beginning of Gone Home and things like that, this would be considered essentially just narrative storytelling. So, and I think the best examples of these are games like Gone Home, Tacoma, Life is Strange, things that, and What Remains of Edith Finch, because these games, you are forced to, not forced to, but you learn the story and the narrative only by searching these things out and finding these details and information. That is the game. So, you know, a lot of people call these things like the walking simulator kind of thing and all that, but there's different variations of it. And I think Edith Finch is a good starting point, because that one story was told in so many ways through things that you found, but then what you find, it, like, exposes you or like jumps you into this metaphor of what happened based on what you read. And that was really interesting. So,
and that's for games like narrative driven, the way I have described them, as we see this genre become more and more prominent, we see more and more titles come out this way with the walking simulator. To me, what these are is the game is done. We are starting at the game over screen.
Yeah.
So the story is already completed. The actions are already done. We are essentially, as the players, we are going through and recataloging everything that just took place.
Right.
Gone Home. The sister is already gone. The creepy family member who was a pedophile and a dope fiend, he is already well gone.
Yeah.
And you, as the player, are exploring that and finding that out through the narrative. So you're listening to diary entries, you're reading the invoice notes of the father or whatever, having that story told to you as you're going through, almost like visiting a museum. These are great ways to have environmental storytelling, because it's, while as leisurely as you get to experience it, you also still feel in control of how you're receiving it.
Right.
So Edith Finch walk through a house and get a shitload of stories at once that, you know, blow your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they really do. That's pretty awesome. I remember whenever Gone Home came out, and that was, you know, to me, it's a short experience. It was 2 hours long, but the fact that the setting that they created for that game, being in 1994, 1995 era or whatever, you know, you could see the times and how, you know, if we did that today, what you'd be finding is just go find somebody's phone, pull it up and just scan through everything that they have.
Yeah, literally.
And, like, unlock it.
Let me read your Facebook
post. Like, they didn't have this back then. So, like, yeah. Like you said, they're finding the diaries, you're finding the papers, you're mm-hmm. finding paper bills that are lying yeah. around the office, like, they're yeah. in the house. And, you know, these tangible objects, it's mm-hmm. cool because you pick it up, and in games like, you know, Mass Effect and stuff like that, you find audio logs and you find story bits as you discover something new, and they just put in your codex.
Right.
But in this, like, you pick it up and physically invest, explore it and look at it. You don't have to, like, flip through everything. Like,
no.
I mean, you can ignore that part, but
right.
there's something cool to, I mean, in VR, it'd be super awesome because you'd be like, oh, man, that is, look at that. That's pretty nice.
Look at what I found.
I found a phone. But I loved how they told those stories in such a cool way. And I wish more games rewarded you for doing that kind of thing. Because, like, when you're in Gone Home, like, your object is to go out there. You know, in this room, there's a bunch of stuff to find. So you pull up in every drawer. You look at in every box. You
right.
do everything you possibly can. But in other games, you're not rewarded for that thing. And I wish they did more of that. And it sounds like Skyrim, Fallout, and stuff do that. But I wish we'd see more of that, because I would love to just, like, dig through stuff and be like, oh, man, this is cool. Like, there's this little the story bit here that I wouldn't have discovered before.
Yeah.
Tacoma did a good job with this storytelling aspect, because they kind of melded the ideas of Horizon Zero Dawn and
right.
Gone Home with you are replaying back augmented reality audio mm-hmm. logs or visual logs of these experiences. So you would see in video form essentially these 3D figures that would recount. You would see a playback of what happened at that moment in time, and you could walk around them and see what they were doing, and then see what everybody was doing at different moments right after one another, which I thought was so cool. But then you'd also have, like, after you find this out, you see somebody go in and, like, pick up this piece of paper and then lay it back down. So after you watch this video play out, you can go and actually pick up this paper and see what shocked them, like, right after in that moment that they were looking, what were they looking at?
Yeah.
And give you stuff that, you know, it's kind of creepy in a way, because you're, like, you know, being this, like, voyeur or whatever, you
yeah
know, but it's
no, it's absolutely, it's, I mean, it's
interesting.
You are the voyeur.
Yeah.
You're the one outside looking in,
right,
to a story that's, again, you're starting at game over,
right?
You're already starting at the end, and you're just cataloging what's taking place at this time.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I mean, would you say something like Firewatch is it also
yes.
falls into this?
Yes, very much so. Firewatch was such a good game. I love that game so much, because they were heavily inspired. They're friends with Steve Gaynor, who did Gone Home. So
yeah.
they were heavily inspired by that. But the way that they took that, they had a narrative, and then they also had the Gone Home stuff. So, like, the entire time it was a dialogue between you and this other person that you
right.
never met. And I thought that was such an interesting and personal connection. That on top of that, you also found out what was going on in this world where you are literally isolated. The only
yeah.
thing that you had around you was you and the animals, and then this person on the other end of this phone call.
Man.
But whenever you would walk around, like, there would be these little boxes, you'd open them up and you'd see books of what other fire watchers, you know, the rangers had discovered, and you would see, like, what they were into. And then you'd see these notes that were up in the tower of, information that as you discover what the mystery is in the game, like you slowly piece together things that just blow, like you had no idea what the story was
right
until you started doing the exploration. And this whole time you think it's all about like you and this girl that you're speaking to, and then right. you find out this whole other piece that came from the exploration of the world.
Right.
And man, and it's beautiful.
I gotta say, one of the ones I'm looking forward to coming up very soon, another indie title from Dimbo Games, Jonathan Nordhagen.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, my friend.
Shout out.
For Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
Yes.
Like that's going to be a very narrative heavy game. I got to play right. a little bit of it at PAX. And I cannot even begin to tell you how I didn't play it at PAX. We played it at South by Southwest Gaming.
Right. Right.
Yeah, this game is going to be something that's very narrative heavy and very just that incredible style of folklore stories, which is something that I'm already into anyways.
Right. So,
These types of environmental storytelling where you're coming in after the fact of whatever has happened has already taken place, and you just get to experience the bits and leisurely play while also, as you say, voyeur and just right. watch. It's so cool, though. Like, that's such yeah. a great way to experience a story.
I feel like, you know, one thing that I've looked at is I wonder how challenging it is to come up with these kinds of experiences, because I mean it's easy to write little pieces of information, but what makes Gone Home and Firewatch and Tacoma and all these games so good is that they have these completely separate pieces of story, you know, like this letter that has this on it and this note that does this, but then piece all these individual segments together. It's like building a puzzle, and a very intricate puzzle, because these
all have to have... a big mind fuck puzzle. Yeah, we can say it.
These all have to have some kind of connection to one another yeah. to make sense, because if you just put a bunch of junk everywhere and then, you know, none of it really ties together, it's not going to have the same impact. But when you see this and then later on, like 2 hours later, you find something else that you have a mental connection to that other thing that you read previously, like...
See,
that's really cool.
And that's how I felt about Dragon Age. Like, that's when I felt like it dropped a textbook in my lap. I was like, here, learn it, dick.
Basically.
It's going to be a test at the end.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm one of the few people out there who just does not like the Dragon Age game.
Yeah. Travis is a big fan. He's obsessed.
Fuck him.
He's a big fan. But so there's one other game we want to talk about. This one kind of is in its own category in a way, because they aren't necessarily, it's not the main part of the game, but yeah. let's talk about Overwatch. So yep. Overwatch has done something that few other games have done, in that, you know, there was no story to this game.
There's no single player story yeah. that you are going to play in Overwatch. It is truly competitive multiplayer action.
Exactly. But what they've done so tastefully well is thrown in these little pieces of information that if you explore the world that they've built, you can find details mm-hmm. about this world that piece together story.
Yeah.
But that's not at all like what the game is. Like, that's not like Gone Home where the main focus is to do this. But everybody's finding they're realizing that if they bring out a new map or whatever, there is going to be something in that map that gives you clues or cues as to
people are not going to be going for the objective. They're going to yeah. be going to find the Easter eggs.
Like when Sombra was being teased for so long, like they had
Palabella la Sombra.
Da-na-na-na-na. Anyway,
sorry, Catalina.
They had so many things that were throughout the world that if nobody would find that, but
someone just happened to shoot the door off one of the outhouses. I'm like,
oh,
hey, there's something in there.
Look at that.
And then sure enough, it's like Sombra.
Yeah.
And I love that about Blizzard and Overwatch, because that is brilliant
yeah.
ways to have an environmental storytelling element.
Right.
Add it into your game.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And whenever they were teasing, well, this new map, Junkertown, just came out. And Louise, who was on the last segment, had to head out for some fantasy football awesome stuff.
You better get Zeke.
He better get Zeke. He made mention to a new character that's shown up like as a poster in one of the maps that looks like a female Roadhog. Is that what he said? Yeah, like that's interesting that they. Who knows how many characters they may have like teased in these maps that we haven't even found.
That's
yet,
true. You know? I mean, we've got to when you think about that, they're like, okay, we're going to come out with another something else, and like everybody's going to scour every level again to try to find. But I think that's so fun. Like the community in general just loves doing that.
Yeah.
People love to go and explore all the Overwatch maps or listen to the Overwatch character dialogue that they have. Because, you know, if you play certain characters on certain maps, they'll sit there and talk about their experience on that map. And that is just such a brilliant way for them to make their games and deliver their story.
Oh, definitely. So I'm looking forward to see, you know, going into the future, I'm curious to see what kind of new clever ways developers, you know, figure out how to give narrative in a way that isn't traditional, like the days of cutscenes and stuff. They're still definitely there and they exist, but I think it's very exciting and kind of refreshing to see things coming through that make a bigger separation between a movie and a video game.
And it's a great shift that's happening where we're no longer seeing the standard formulaic way of a video game where opening cinematic. Play, 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 cutscene, play, 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 cutscene, play, 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 ending credits.
Right, right.
Like we are now melding kind of all of this together, and we're seeing the interactive cutscenes, and we're seeing this more player in the cutscenes. We're seeing more, we're seeing fewer cutscenes and more just this subtle storytelling where you get to discover the big reveal just by reading it kind of thing. So there's a lot that video games are changing with the way that they're having this storytelling be done. I think it's great that we're breaking out of that mold.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm excited to see more from environmental storytelling in the future. It's an awesome way to deliver narrative in like a non-linear fashion.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of times it's guided, like we talked about with Gone Home and things like that, but as a player, you get to experience it the way that you want to experience it. And I think that's what makes it so special.
We're only going to get better.
Yeah.
From here moving forward. Like, we're only going to get better at this.
Eventually, you're going to find story that you don't even realize you're finding. It's just going to like just appear out of nowhere.
It's going to be like the fucking inception of stories. Story within the story within that story.
That'd be pretty sweet. That'd be pretty sweet. Mind blown. Mind blown. Well, that's going to conclude our discussion topic. I don't know what I just said. That's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. But if there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. And also, don't forget to check out our live recording of this segment if you're listening to us on Thursday on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/theinnergamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Thank you guys for checking out our discussion topic. It was pretty awesome and exciting.
It was
fun.
A lot of fun. Very engaging.
So engaging.
You're a decent conversationalist, Brett.
Oh, thanks, man.
A decent conversationalist.
I'm going to give myself a brush on the shoulders there because I'm proud of myself. So next week, we got some games coming out.
And you lost it.
What are you going to be?
You fucking lost it.
Sorry. Sorry. What are you playing next week?
Oh, Destiny.
What's that?
Fuck off. Destiny 2, man. That's going to be it. I'm going to be getting it on my systems, and it's just going to be power through, man. We've got a raid to do in a week, so I got to get as ready as I can.
Got to level ourselves up to like level 50.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Make sure you stay tuned to youtube.com/innergamer for our video coverage on Destiny 2. So
yeah.
I'm sure we'll have it in there at some point somewhere. So check that out.
Mm.
Anyway.
What about you? What are you playing?
I'm going to be playing Destiny 2.
Damn right you are.
And I'm going to be playing Mario plus Rabbids. And I have other games that I've... Man, I have so many games that I've started. I've started Life is Strange. I've started Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. I've started Mario plus Rabbids. I still started Zelda and haven't finished it yet. I started, and then I'm going to start Destiny. So that's like five stories that I have to meld together. Oh, and Horizon Zero Dawn I haven't beat yet. So there's
how have
six
you not
stories.
Beaten that yet? Jesus Christ.
There's six stories.
You have so much shit to catch up on.
Dude, it's so hard. Life is so hard as a gamer. Like, I don't know what to do with myself. Anyway, so that's what I'm playing.
We're good.
It's going to be good. I can't wait to talk about Destiny some more. It's going to be fun. I can't believe I'm excited about
hopefully
it.
Hopefully I'll say it. Let's hopefully this hype train rides all the way to the end.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That was a pretty sweet live action trailer, by the way. Exploding thing.
Oh, they nailed it.
It
yeah.
was so good.
But then again, like, Bungie always nails their trailers.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon. It's a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Plus, if you support us, we're not just going to leave you hanging. We got awesome rewards waiting for you. We got stuff like being a guest on the podcast, getting exclusive content only you can have access to, or even joining us for a session of D&D, which these guys may not tell you is a good thing, because y'all been having some rough times in D&D lately.
Yeah. We're not in the... We're out into the world.
And
we
it's
don't,
just
we don't
beating
have
the shit
tutorial
out of you.
Level anymore.
The training wheels are off. And this bucket sucks.
The training wheels are off, and I'm going off a cliff fast.
So, yes, please head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. That's going to be it for us today, guys. My name is Devin Dury.
My name is Bray Noski.
And you've been listening to The Inner Gamer. It's only two of us, so it's a little
that
weak.
That was actually pretty good.
Dude, throw in an echo when we do it, too. Inner Gamer. My echo was better. Stop it. No echo does that. No echo does that.
It does if it's dying a painful death. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Dude, what are we going to do? There's no more Game of Thrones.
Fuck.
It's all gone. It's done.
Dun, 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 dun,